Hi, I'm Francis Hellier, and welcome to my brand new podcast, Metaverse. This is a podcast for the future-minded, a series for anyone on the hunt for the next big thing and all its possibilities and implications. This is Tomorrow's World Today. With each episode, I will chat to those at the top of their fields, from futurists in crypto and space travel to forecasters in business and tech. Together, we will ask the question, what's next? Today, I'm joined by Jimmy Nguyen, public speaker, media commentator, global ambassador for Bitcoin SV, and a founding president of the Bitcoin Association. The Global Industry Organization is a nonprofit which advances BSV, bringing together enterprises, developers, service providers, and more into the ecosystem. Their mission is to support BSV as the original Bitcoin and build a regulation-friendly system grounded on lawful conduct. Jimmy started out his career as an intellectual property and digital technology lawyer. He joined Enchain before then helping launch the Bitcoin Association. Recognized as one of the 500 leading lawyers in America by LawDragon at just age 36, Jimmy gained the Industry Leader Award in 2017. He's also been inducted into the California Minority Counsel Program's Diversity Hall of Fame. Jimmy, it's great to have you on the show.
Good to see you and thank you for having me.
Let's go back to where it all started. What made you shift from law and being a very successful lawyer into Bitcoin?
Yeah, I was a digital technology and IP lawyer for about 21 years, which seems like a very long time now that I think about it, in the United States. And I was a partner of big corporate law firms. And I was lucky enough to graduate law school and become a young professional right during the mid-1990s. I'm sure you remember them too, as the internet was booming. And so I saw the emergence of the internet as one major technology platform that's really changed our world. And then I'd always been thinking I wanted to do something more on the business side, because as a lawyer, it's a very fascinating, interesting career, but you're really there to support to your client's business interests as opposed to leading things you want to build and create yourself. And I had this sort of urge from having watched the internet grow that I wanted to be involved in leading and building new technology movements myself. And about the last few years of my legal career, I knew it was time to go. And some clients of mine were involved in the blockchain Bitcoin space as it was emerging, as well as fintech. And they were launching a blockchain R&D business in the United Kingdom in London, Enchain, which you mentioned. And I was helping them behind the scenes and all of a sudden, you know, got offered an opportunity to take a leap and join them. And that's what led to my entry into the blockchain world. But it was mostly because I was interested not just in Bitcoin as a financial payments or investment tool, which is what people think of it as today. I was really interested in the concept of blockchain technology as a new form of data distribution and data power, similar to how the internet emerged in the 1990s. So that's how I ended up here. It's sort of, I say, I didn't really find Bitcoin, it found me.
Excellent. Now, I'm pretty sure that most of our listeners will understand the history of Bitcoin. But I think for those that perhaps don't know where we are today and why there's different versions of Bitcoin, et cetera, perhaps you can give a summary as to how we've ended up now with more than one Bitcoin and what that actually means.
Sure. It's, I know, confusing sometimes to a lot of the general public, and I know you understand it, but here we go. So the Bitcoin white paper, which introduced the concept of Bitcoin to the world, was posted on the internet in 2008 under the pseudonym Satoshi Nakamoto. And there's always been this mystery for many years about who Satoshi Nakamoto is. But it introduced to the world this concept of Bitcoin as a peer-to-peer electronic cash system. That's the title of the white paper. So what that means is I should be able to send to you peer-to-peer from wherever you and I are in the world directly without the need of an intermediary, such as a payment processor, credit card processing system, PayPal, or any of these digital apps people use today, should be able to send you electronic cash. And that's an important phrase in the Bitcoin white paper because it was designed to create a more efficient means to send money across the internet, including small casual transactions, which is referenced in the white paper. So it wasn't just about sending big amounts of money, but it was because the internet did not have, when it was created, a native way to send payments. Right? We could send data, emails, website information, but there was not a native way to send you a money payment and without adding some kind of intermediary or layer on top. And that's what Bitcoin was designed to solve. So Bitcoin's blockchain started in 2009. The blockchain is the data ledger that is used to process and move Bitcoin transactions. Instead of being kept by one person or bank or company, it's kept by many, many nodes, so it's distributed. So Bitcoin continued to proceed. A lot of people didn't pay attention to it at first. People started to after a few years. And then there became this really big debate in the Bitcoin community about whether Bitcoin should scale. And by that, what we mean is whether or not it should grow its capacity to handle more transactions and more data, and do so to keep it fast as a network and to keep the transaction fee small. Because when you send a Bitcoin transaction, if I send you a transaction, I have to attach a fee to send the transaction, which goes to the winning miner, the people who provide computing power to update the Bitcoin ledger, the blockchain. And so there was a contingent of the Bitcoin community who said, no, we need to keep the blocks small. Every block of transactions is added to this ledger on average every 10 minutes. So if you keep it small, you can only add so many transactions. And then they get backed up, and then it costs more to send a transaction. The analogy I like to give is think back to the early days of the internet. When email first started, if whoever created the email protocol limited the capacity, the bandwidth of the email system to only handle 7 emails a second worldwide from everyone, we would not have the large email traffic we have today. And so the Bitcoin blockchain protocol developers had restricted the block size, the block cap of the blockchain to 1 megabyte for many, many years. And that's very small. It only allows up to 7 transactions per second maximum on the chain. And so that's nowhere near what you need to challenge Visa or MasterCard as a payment system, which do on average 2,000 or 3,000 transactions a second and up to 60,000 transactions a second, you know, during holiday shopping season, for example. And so there became this big internal debate in the Bitcoin community. Some people said, no, we need to scale bigger, make the blocks bigger. And other people said, no, let's keep the blocks small. It sort of created this rift between the small blockers and the big blockers. And so when I got interested in Bitcoin, I was really interested in its power to handle large, large amounts of transactions and data. And you can't do that if you keep the block small. So in 2017, a contingent of the Bitcoin community had this battle with the small blockers, and it led to a split of the chain, where through what's called a software hard fork, a contingent created a version of Bitcoin called Bitcoin Cash, BCH. And there's debates about who forked off from who, but essentially resulted in 2 different coins. The main Bitcoin people think about, BTC, ticker symbol, and then this Bitcoin Cash, BCH, ticker symbol. Bitcoin Cash said, let's make the blocks bigger and scale so that we can keep the network faster. We supported that for a while. And then after about a year, there was rifts between us and other people within the BCH community. And it led to the world's first Bitcoin hash war. And then we split off again. Again, a debate. We think we kept the original Bitcoin protocol. Other people say we forked off from them. And so now there's 3 main competing Bitcoins. Ours is called Bitcoin SV, which stands for Satoshi Vision. And that is designed to reflect that we're trying to restore the original vision of Satoshi Nakamoto. And the biggest difference between us, BCH, and BTC is scaling. We've restored a lot of the technical elements of the original Satoshi protocol that had been changed along the years. But now our blockchain has no limit, no set limit by us or the protocol developers as to how many transactions or how big the blocks can be. And we've developed software mechanisms and technical improvements to show that it can scale bigger. We've already shown on our network, 5,000-6,000 transactions a second capacity. We have a new enterprise version of our software called Terranode, in which live demo tests have shown 75 to 100,000 transactions per second. And we think it'll go more and more to millions, so that one day we think our network can process the world's transactions down to the micro and nano levels of payments, to not just send you $1 million anywhere in the world, but to send efficiently 1 penny or half a penny to power all forms of digital interactions, as well as all of these blockchain data applications people talk about, like smart contracts or tokens. So we think the Bitcoin blockchain, if allowed to scale as Satoshi originally envisioned, can do all of these things and can transform the internet and all of our consumer and business lives as we know it. So that's why there's more than one Bitcoin, and we're Bitcoin SV, BSV.
Thank you, Jimmy. That's a great explanation of the things that have been going on. I mean, this is still technology in its infancy. I mean, it took a long time for the internet to sort of really take off and become something that people recognize. With any new technology, sometimes things go wrong. And I know that recently there was a problem, there was a hack against Bitcoin SV. What happened and what sort of measures are in place to prevent those things from happening?
Sure. Starting about a month ago, and there's been a series of what are called block reorganization attacks, where some malicious attacker out there is trying to create what are called double spends of Bitcoin coins, when they essentially try to secretly mine or create blocks that they do in secret, not on the public ledger, and then use their hash or computing power to all of a sudden dump them onto our chain and knock out blocks of transactions that are valid with their invalid blocks to be able to get the benefit of their coins more than once, and then use that to send to crypto exchanges and try to trade these fake second BSV coins for some other coin like Ethereum or Dogecoin or whatever coin of the month, commit fraud. It's downright fraud, but it's using, you know, crafty technical techniques to do this on the ledger. So we detected it. We have monitoring teams around the world 24/7 that detected it. And the recent attacks, especially there's been a new wave of them that happened a couple of days ago. The honest miners of the network have been able to repel these most recent attacks that we've detected over the last week. And so it's allowed our teams around the world and our partners to analyze the issue, develop much more resilient mitigation factors, work with industry partners such as the exchanges to notify them so that they could take protective measures to avoid being cheated. So it's happened to other blockchains. It's not unique to BSV. It's happened to Ethereum Classic. It's happened to a number of other chains. So it's unfortunate that it happens, but it is frankly a reality of any technology, just like when companies get their computer servers hacked or their databases hacked. You know, people are always trying to DDoS, you know, websites. There's bad actors out there, and it's a reflection that there's value being generated in the blockchain ecosystem. So we have dealt with it. We're still dealing with it, and it has forced us to put together crisis management plans, mitigation plans, and figure out how we can be stronger, more resilient. So, you know, while I wish it doesn't happen, forces us to, you know, create and learn from them to, you know, create more defensive mechanisms and strengthen the network. We've also taken this very seriously from a law perspective. We have reported the crimes, because they are crimes, to law enforcement agencies in more than one country. I myself have talked to teams from one of the law enforcement agency groups. We've provided them information about it. And, you know, I hope that these attackers are caught. To send a signal to the world, don't attack blockchains. People think it's just a technical thing. It's fraud and it's a crime to steal money.
So thanks, Jimmy. I mean, I think it's true. Any new technology is going to go through these fits and starts. I mean, it's something that happens. I remember back in the day when we started our business and everyone thought we were criminals because we were selling tickets online, and it was something that hadn't been done before. And so, you know, people come up against this. And I suppose when you are under those sort of attacks, it's because you're doing something that people, you know, want to stop or want to get involved with.
Part of it also is, you know, to be honest, you know about this as well. There's a lot of tribalism in the digital currency, cryptocurrency community. And because BSV is this, you know, competing chain to BTC, there's a lot of, you know, sort of toxic crypto Twitter battles I see. Yeah. And I'm sure there are, we don't know who's behind the attack. They're obviously doing it for financial reasons. There could be other motivating reasons we don't know, which is, you know, they just don't like our competing coin. And that may have something to do with it. And, you know, we face it like strong people and know that we are on the right and that bad actors ultimately get caught.
Well, Jimmy, I know you're a lover, not a fighter, as Michael Jackson would say. So yes. I'm sure things will turn out well. Tell me about Craig Wright.
He's Australian.
I need a little bit more. Come on, I need a scoop. I need the scoop.
Oh, gosh. So Dr. Craig S. Wright is obviously a very visible face of the Bitcoin SV ecosystem. He is my colleague. He's chief scientist of Enchain, the company that I used to be CEO at, and he is obviously very involved in the BSV world. He is the Satoshi Nakamoto of the Bitcoin white paper fame, Satoshi Nakamoto. I know a lot of people do not believe that. And obviously, if you look him up on the internet, there's all kinds of, you know, reports, people saying he's a fraud. I personally believe he's Satoshi Nakamoto, having worked with him for many years now. I also believe that Bitcoin SV's success is not about Craig. And people sometimes think that we're out trying to prove Craig is Satoshi Nakamoto to make BSV successful. I got into this because I really believe in the technology and his technology vision, which is scale Bitcoin big so that it can power a much more efficient internet for payments and all forms of data applications. But I work with him a lot. He is, in my belief, Satoshi Nakamoto, but I also never ask anyone to support, invest in, build upon, or do anything with BSV because he is Satoshi Nakamoto or not. They should choose that based on our technological superiority, because there's no other chain that you can be doing on Bitcoin where the transaction fee is a median of 1/100th or 1/50th of a US cent, which is what we are, which is based upon scaling. So that's Dr. Craig S. Wright, and he is a very fascinating, intelligent character. He's brilliant in that he knows and studies many different subjects. The man has 20 some degrees, academic degrees, of, you know, master's and PhD levels, and is constantly learning. And I think it's a reflection of what I think Bitcoin really is. People think it's this technological marvel, but it's really, its genius is the ability to combine many different disciplines. Cryptography, of course, mathematics, game theory, economic incentives, and legal compliance all in one. So he's the crazy Aussie in my life.
Tell me a bit more about the association. What are you trying to achieve with the association? Obviously, you're encouraging business to get involved in the BSV ecosystem. So what else are you trying to achieve with it?
Our association has a very broad mandate. It's, you know, simplest form is grow the usage and adoption of BSV as a digital currency, as well as its blockchain for consumer, enterprise, and government usage. And so to do that, we do various things. One, we support the development of what's called the node software that's used to run the network, as well as development infrastructure tools to support it. We do a lot of developer training and education because we need to train and educate more people to build on this blockchain technology. So we also train business people as well. We do a lot of educational work. We work with all of the ecosystem businesses out there, such as the miners, exchanges, digital asset service providers, for example, people who do custodians. And we also try to talk to companies, for example, like yours, about why you might want to build new versions of your ticketing application and capabilities using a blockchain, or integrate payment tools that we could provide through ecosystem partners. And I also do a lot of engagement with government, because we believe that for blockchain technology and Bitcoin technology to grow to mass adoption, governments and big businesses need to be comfortable with it. So what happened with the internet? In the beginning, you know, people were a little afraid of the internet, wild, wild west, gray market things happening. And then law and order came to the internet. It's still coming. And that led to bigger businesses wanting to use it. So I think the same is true with blockchain technology and digital assets. There's a lot of talk, including the United States and in Europe, about the need to regulate cryptocurrencies to prevent illegal securities, such as during the ICO craze, to stop money laundering with more KYC and AML compliance requirements, which are the typical requirements we have in the normal financial and banking world. So we're engaging with a lot of government leaders to advise on policy around the world about how they should regulate this, to ensure compliance while at the same time not stifling innovation. So our association has members across the world, and I have team members across the world, and we do all of those different elements of activity to help grow the adoption and use of this technology.
I mean, one of the things that I love about crypto in general, you know, regardless of which coin or which technology, it's just about the fact that it's the great equalizer, in my opinion. It, you know, it has the potential to really spread wealth and take the control from individuals or governments and actually spread that to the individuals around the world. So can you give some examples maybe of technologies that have been built on the BSV platform that, you know, really are going to shake things up and make a difference?
I think the biggest thing to understand is people think of Bitcoin only as this financial asset. You hear about it a lot in the news because the price goes up and the price goes down, right? But the reality is, for the main BTC, Bitcoin, no one actually uses it for daily transactions. So no one may be an exaggeration, but very few are transactions are done for payments. People buy it and hold it as an investment asset these days. So we're trying to completely change it by creating a Bitcoin that people actually use. So the types of things that are being done on our platform are, for example, obviously payment apps and wallets, but that allow payments to micro and nano levels. Meaning, for example, there's a wallet called Handcash, very popular one in our space from two Spaniards. And they also have a tool called Pew Pew, which allows people to send to many people at once, small amounts of money, 1 cent, 2 cents, to like tip people, for example. I think that's really fascinating to send micropayments to people. But you can do with that many other things. So people have created, for example, games, video games, our esports type games using our technology, where one's called Haste and Haste Arcade, where if you play a video game on their platform and you get onto the leaderboard, just like in the old days of the video arcade, you put a quarter in and you hopefully get on the leaderboard, but you don't make any money. What if you paid through this game a little bit of Bitcoin SV to play? If you get to the leaderboard, everyone after you who does not beat your score, you get a tiny little portion of their payment so it can get distributed to your Bitcoin wallet. I think that's really fascinating. They've created this instant leaderboard payout concept because of that. So there's an esports game called Crypto Fights built on our platform where they record the battle moves to our blockchain for data integrity and to stop cheating in esports betting. So that's really grown very popular recently. There are more business-like applications such as supply chain management, management of healthcare data, COVID-19 vaccination records managed on our blockchain. There are social media apps, for example, taking Twitter or Instagram and allowing you as the user to actually earn money instead of the platform earn money, inverting the business model, or instead of just Facebook earning from selling your data. What if every time you posted a picture on an app called Relica, which is like Instagram, you pay a little bit of BSV to post it, but then people tip you little amounts if they like it or comment it. So if you become an influencer like you, you could actually be making money. This video that we're recording now, you can put on a platform on BSV called Streamanity, where people pay you small amounts of money to watch. And that could be transformed to paying by the second, paying every 30 seconds, small amounts of BSV, you know, into your wallet. And so there's a whole vast variety of applications. There's an AR/VR platform on our space. Someone has created data integrity platform so that when pharmaceutical companies are doing clinical trials and testing new drugs, they can record what are called hashes or fingerprints of the data to our blockchain to verify what the data is at a moment in time. So if someone tries to change or manipulate the data later, it can be detected. So everything from that to accounting, invoice management doing on our chain, and finally government applications. There are some interesting government uses coming. The small island nation of Tuvalu in the South Pacific is building the world's first national digital ledger on our blockchain, BSV, because the country's at risk of sinking due to climate change and the waters rising in the South Pacific. It's only about 12,000 people on these 8 or 9 islands, and they might have to actually physically move their people to another landmass one day. And they're preparing for that possibility by digitizing all of their government and citizen records, such as ID or passport information or property records. And they needed a blockchain that could handle large data for a small amount of fees, which is our blockchain. So it's a exciting variety of things, from consumer payment and social media apps to changing the world supply chain to changing a whole country that's being done at BSV, and we're just getting started. So I can't wait to see what the next couple of years hold.
Well, we certainly agree that blockchain is changing the world, and we have so many exciting developments ahead of us. Where do you see us in 10 years' time?
I hope in 10 years' time that digital currencies, first of all, that there's fewer of them, there's too many cryptocurrencies, right? We have 7,000, 8,000, there's too many blockchains. I hope there's a consolidation. Just like the world operates on one global internet, which made things more efficiency, we believe in a world where you could have one primary global blockchain, which we think is BSV. So I'd like to see that. And even if it's not one in 10 years, that there's far fewer cryptocurrencies and blockchains than there are today. In addition, I'd like to see a world where digital currencies are actually used. As I mentioned, Bitcoin gets all of this attention in the media because big companies like MicroStrategy and Tesla and Square buy up large amounts of it, expressly not to use it in daily transactions. And that's just wrong. It just, it makes no sense. Value of the coin should be based on real utility. So we want to see digital currencies actually used in daily life by people, not just for sending big amounts, but small amounts to each other, you know, every day and paying for things in daily life. I'd also like to see a world where our internet experience and our digital experience is changed by digital currency. Because we're thinking about Bitcoin of, okay, I'll use Bitcoin to pay for Starbucks coffee. You know, that's not that inventive. But what if there's a world where all of your interactions on social media result in little payments going back and forth? So if you, me, and our friend Brisa Carlton are all like liking each other's, you know, Instagram images on this app called Relica, we could all be earning money. You know, what if there was a possibility, because I know you love Broadway, where there's apps where fans could tip send rewards tokens to their favorite Broadway performers or West End performers, right, during performances for small amounts. No one's going to send them large amounts. So doing things like that, and also in developing countries, I think Bitcoin can be really powerful to provide unbanked people, of which there are many across the world that don't have bank accounts, access to financial services just because they have a Bitcoin wallet on their mobile phone. They don't have bank accounts, but they do have smartphones, many of them. And with Bitcoin apps, they can actually engage in financial services and earn small amounts of value. So I want to see that world. And then all of these bigger enterprise government uses are exciting as well. But it all starts and ends with, is this really useful? You know, is there really utility? Are people using digital currencies, BSV or anything else? And so I think I want to make a world where it's where we're seeing you and I are talking 10 years going, oh my God, look at all of these BSV or other Bitcoin digital currency type applications where you see people using them. They're not just buying them on an exchange to park and hope they get rich. Because it's just the wrong mentality, right? Bitcoin wasn't created by Satoshi Nakamoto to make everybody rich. It was created to make a more efficient way to send payments. And that, as you mentioned, can help equalize the world, especially, you know, in developing countries where the cost of sending financial transactions is very high, right? And we're fortunate in our westernized countries that we're from to have good financial systems. But if you're from the Philippines, where 85% of the people are unbanked, or, you know, you're in places like, you know, Sudan, where I visited in April to lead a blockchain summit, you need better financial system. So I hope all that comes to pass in 10 years.
I think that's right. I think, how do you cope with being a celebrity in the blockchain world? Because you are. I mean, you have fans. You have, you know, you're right out there. Not only are you a fantastic lawyer and incredibly experienced in this field, but, you know, you have people who are following you around the world because you're a fantastic speaker as well.
Oh, thank you. You know, it's not what I thought was going to happen when I entered this world. It's flattering, but it comes with its fair share of challenges. I have lots of, you know, crypto Twitter trolls after me. You know, every time I post anything, I get, you know, you have to learn to have a thick skin. I think that's the thing I've learned the most, which is it's nice to get recognized, but not always. And it comes with its fair share of attacks and negativity. In the beginning, that used to kind of raise my eyebrows, and I just realized it's just par for the course. The good part of it is the visibility to be able to meet great people like you, get introduced to lots of people who are really wanting to change the world. A lot of the people I talk to want to get involved in digital assets and blockchain, not just to get rich, but there are a lot of them are successful already in other fields. They are wealthy, and yes, they would like to make more money, but they're really interested in the social good that can come out of blockchain. So that's the part I like the most, is the ability not just to get, you know, recognized sometimes at events or on the street, but it's the opportunity that visibility provides to meet great people who can hopefully help us all do greater things. So, you know, in the beginning it was kind of cute and entertaining. Now I just don't think about it too much because the work we do every day is just so busy, right? That it's, you know, you don't have time for it. You know, you get a network attack like we've had, then, you know, the fact that, you know, you have fans just it becomes irrelevant.
Just for the listeners, I mean, if whatever side of the block wars you're on, if you ever get a chance to listen to Jimmy speak, he's quite inspirational and fascinating. So please do make sure you tag along and listen to what he has to say. And on that note, Jimmy, what does the future hold for you personally?
More sleep. I hope more sleep. I am personally, you know, I've been on this blockchain journey for about about four or five years, and which isn't a long time in the scheme of things, but it's kind of like dog years. It feels like a really long, long time, or like gay relationship years, right? It seems a long, long time. And so I want to see BSV lift off to certain moments. And I have really been, you know, fortunate and blessed to be able to help lead it. So I have my own aspirations to, you know, lead businesses, to do more work that is, I don't say nonprofit or charitable, but that is committed to growing use of technology, whether it's blockchain or other things, to help people and countries. That's near and dear to my heart. I think it's partly because, you know, I am from an immigrant family. I was born in Vietnam, brought to the United States. My parents were refugee immigrants, and I've always had this, you know, place in my heart for the importance of using whatever you have to help people, because our family got helped when we came to the United States. And so I think that's a lot of my future, is helping BSV become more successful, leading business and business interests, and helping other businesses in the space, and then using the platform and visibility I have to find opportunities to help people and countries that need help. Especially, I have a soft spot for the disadvantaged, people who are historically underrepresented, you know, women, racial minorities, LGBT people, anyone who's sort of, you know, been from the outside, right? Not grown up on the inside and had those advantages. I really want to use a lot of my future to help people in those situations.
Well, I've no doubt that whatever you do, Jimmy, will be a huge success. So, you're a friend of Metaverse, of course, and of myself. And
I can't wait to do something with you. I can't wait to do something with you. We're gonna find some blockchain metaversey thing. In fact, one of the AR VR companies in our space is all focused on Metaverse and empowering location data. And so we're gonna probably have to, I think I'm gonna have to body scan you into the AR VR app that is gonna debut at our next conference. We'll get the Francis body scan.
Okay, better be a big scanner. Lockdown's not been kind. Lockdown's not been kind to me, Jimmy.
As I say, I like big blocks and I cannot lie. And I like big scanners and I cannot lie.
Well, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure, Jimmy. Welcome. Thank you so much again for your time, and look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you. Good luck in the metaverse.
You've been listening to Metaverse with me, Francis Hellier. Thank you to my guest, Jimmy Nguyen, for a fascinating conversation. Tweet us at MetaversePod with any suggestions or feedback. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please share a link on social media. You can sign up to receive an email when each new episode drops at our website, metaverse.fm.